let's hurry this up so I can get back to watching the third test of the ashes. It's live from the Five Hole, Faxes from UncleDale.com's weekly podcast. I am Sam Fells, your host of the Sam Fells But Who's Buying newsletter. You can find me on Blue Sky at Fells Gate. We are coming to you after a decently satisfying, maybe more than that. I'm being glib. Very satisfying Bears win. We are also coming to you minutes after a hilarious and dispiriting Hawks loss. We'll get to it all. So we are, of course, in fatal four-way formation with the usual crew. Leading off with Dr. Viral, he is the biggest jackass, no talent in the business, and he's the CEO of WBCW on Wrestling Brain's Twitch channel every Monday night at 9. I saw there was a special, but that's still Monday, right? It's not a Friday. That's next Monday.
Uncle Loudy's Loud Loudness? Yes, that's Monday.
Uncle Loudy's Loud Loudness next Monday. You should tune in. You can find him on Blue Sky at Torque Penderloin. It is, of course, Andrew Cieslak.
Yeah, really, I'm really excited for the guy who's trying to become immortal to get hit by a bus and die.
That Brian, try to whatever.
Drink all your son's piss you want. That bus hits you, you're fucking dead, dude.
Driven by Andrew Cieslak.
Yeah, Cieslak will be driving the bus. So now Slack's driving the bus.
He's making all the stops.
He's working the ones and twos for us tonight. He's our technical supervisor and our supervising technician, as well as Hollywood's go-to grizzled crank. You can find him on Blue Sky at Matt McClure, but please don't. It's Matt McClure.
Hail Satan.
Hail Satan. And last but not least, he is the goal line assassin. He is the archivist. He is the Oracle of Humboldt Park, and he is loading up on pig's blood. You cannot find him on Blue Sky at Fifth Feather, but he might find you. He's lurking in the night. It's Fifth Feather, John.
Isn't Grizzled Crank the offensive coordinator for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers?
No, I sent that picture. Who the hell was that?
Yeah, what was it? Grizz Dank?
I think he's a defenseman on the Black.
Josh Grisman.
Oh, Grisman. Okay,
or something.
So it's different than Grizzled Crank.
Is that like Kyle Ortman?
Yeah, Grisman would be Chicago's go-to Grizzled
Grisman.
Matt Grisman of Chapo Trap House.
Oh, my God.
I'm leafing through here.
We're already off the rails.
We're efforting.
We're efforting big time, buddy. John, I don't know.
Josh Grizzard.
The Grizzard, yes. The Grizzard.
And the Lizard Wizard or whatever.
That's right.
They suck, too. I'm just going to go ahead.
All right.
Sam would have thrown himself in the river on purpose after seeing that show. Too soon? Should I be sorry about that?
No, you're never sorry about anything, so why would you start now?
Yeah, you'll have to apologize to Justin Bourne again for me.
All right. Slack, John, I don't know where your yellow pads are at. It was all pretty much what we expected, but...
Well, once
here
again...
Here we are.
Once again, the story is a bunch of people decided to make their jobs on the idea that Shedeur Sanders was going to outplay Caleb Williams for some reason. And
I just feel like, and I don't want to absolve anyone here because they're all morons, but because of the amount of space the NFL demands that takes up during the week,
industrial complex,
the amount of airspace that is gobbled up by it. And we talk about this in the preseason. I think people just say everything possible to fill the air. No one else had said Shedeur was going to outplay Caleb, so these morons are like, well, here's a little space that hasn't been taken. I'll say it. These people don't get paid to think or to analyze or to even consider. They just get paid to emit. Emit noise. Emit sounds. Here's a sound that hasn't been said yet. It might get some attention. So I'm going to admit it. And that's what you get. Because no one who has watched Shedeur Sanders with any kind of critical eye has agreed that he's an NFL quarterback.
Well, we have a lot of people in the media who are just box score checkers.
Right.
They see a box score and they make an opinion. And I only
watch Red Zone, and I can tell you Shedeur Sanders is not an NFL quarterback.
Well, I guess what I'll say is it's nice that they somehow brought the local media together in defense of our quarterback. Which is a first.
Yeah, that's a new one. Although, after Sunday, what choice would you have?
I don't know. It seems like it's still a week to week referendum. So, you know, 10-4,
play to play, possession to possession.
And by the way, I do think it also hasn't been, I guess, said enough that was a bad Browns team, but one of the best defenses in the league that he lit up.
Jordan Love couldn't figure it out.
And I think the thing that bugs me is the term, my bugaboo term, is inconsistent, which Daryl Johnston said multiple times, and I've heard throughout the year, inconsistent offense that's been ranked in the top 10 the entire season.
And he watches football.
Is a consistent offense one that scores a touchdown on every single drive? Is that the definition? Yeah,
they average 70 points.
Like I don't understand if you're I think what it comes down to is that we have been raised in a town where good quarterbacking was a myth, something that you heard about in like old scripture. And so now that you're seeing it, you don't know what the fuck it is. And now you're sitting here with a team that's scoring in the high 20s and 30s every game almost, and you're looking it in the mouth. Like what do you want? I don't understand. I really don't.
This is sixth really in yards per game, ninth in points per game.
Yeah, in the first year of this experiment,
mm-hmm. And things are barely clicking on the passing side.
Right, it's genuinely shocking. I don't know, but
perhaps we've gone so long without a competent offense that the fantasies we've built up in our heads has just built and built and built into something that is not actually possible.
Yeah, box score scouts.
Well, yeah, it's
supposed to look like. It's supposed to look like 22 for 24 for 348 yards and four touchdowns and no picks. Which, again, typically, if you're throwing for 350 yards a game, you're losing the game.
Especially in Ben Johnson's world, who loves his outside zone run.
Yes. Yes, exactly right. And, you know, if you're a quarterback like most of these guys who are, as I like to call them, check down merchants, then great. You can have your high completion percentage. The outcome is not to have a high completion percentage. The outcome is wins, and the outcome is a lot of points.
Yeah.
I'm getting those, so I'm good. I'm happy. Everybody else can search for their completion percentage somewhere else. Marcus Mariota has a high completion percentage. Go watch the Commanders.
It's going great.
It's going great. Anyway, John, sorry, you can take over from here.
Oh, no. I mean, I was just going to talk about Andrew Spilkas a little bit before the game, and I wanted to talk about we've been in that position for so long of being the 3-10, 4-9 team playing a upstart team.
Yeah. We should mention Slack had a fair amount of Spilkas on Sunday morning.
I did.
I'm not trying to single out Andrew here.
No, it's also kind of his thing.
It is. And I just want to, I want to talk it through because I feel like I was kind of getting into Andrew's point and it just serves. We needed this reminder that, when you get to the end of the season like this and you are a 2-4 win team and you're going up against a team heading to the playoffs or on the cusp of the playoffs, you just do not win on the road. I mean, how many times have we seen it through the years where the Bears went and played somebody on the road and got their doors kicked in and it wasn't close from kickoff. And I feel like that's where some of these bad faith actors were trying to it's just not reality. It just, I would love to know. I would love for some dipshit like Mark Podash to actually look into this sort of stat, but like, what is the record of a team that's really bad that say has 2-4 wins going on the road against a playoff team at the end of the season, what their record is in December, let's say.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean,
you could first example, football reference that yourself.
The example that comes
I would
to mind
guess
is
it's like 2-1,024.
The example that immediately comes to mind is last year's 49ers game where, you know, are the Niners, you know, are they even that good? And da 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 da. And the Bears get in there and the Niners score like four touchdowns.
That was a 6-win team. That was a 6-win Niners team that absolutely.
Oh, they weren't even that good.
Yeah. They weren't even that good.
Yeah.
Right. I'm thinking along the lines of like when they played Buffalo in like 2023, even though that was at Soldiers.
Christmas Eve, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And that game wasn't even close. And it was a cold and miserable day. But still, it was that game was not even close. So there's just something to be said for when we get to this time of season, and if you get those mismatches, I don't see how these three, you know, the teams in that win range could ever win on the road. If it happens, it's very, very rare.
We're just so unaccustomed to the Bears being on the other side of that in December.
Exactly, Sam. I feel like it's uncharted territory for a lot of us. We feel very uncomfortable being here, and so we're expecting the floor to fall out. But that's just not what happens, and that's exactly what happened on Sunday. Is that the game was? I mean, it was itchy for a little bit, but the itchiness was all, I feel like, very much self.
Well, I was doing it, so it was clearly self-imposed. Let me accompany Slack here, because I texted you guys at 14-3, I think.
Yeah.
And I, you know, the Bears had come up empty on a couple drives. There was one big bomb, right? And I'm like, great. Now they've let these vessels hang around,
right?
You know, they haven't put them away. I know what happens here, you know. And then I think they scored on the next two drives, and that was that.
Yes. Yeah. And again, like you said, Shadur is not an NFL quarterback. I think if it was somebody back there that was a decent NFL quarterback, you would feel very right in your feelings that thinking like, okay, we've let them hang around and now they're going to come back. I mean, but there's a reason why Cleveland's won three games at this point of the season.
Right.
So, and again, like, I don't know what anybody saw out of that game from the Cleveland side where you thought, yeah, that's potential for.
He lit up a, because they were trailing a bad, horrendous, even Titans team.
That's been so obvious. I'm sure Andrew saw this because he's a film pervert, but I don't know if you saw Shadur's reaction to that first interception that he threw to DeMarco Jackson. Did you see it, Andrew?
No.
He didn't move. he just stood there and watched.
Yeah. I mean, he's out of his depth.
Again, I'm going to ask Sam's question. If his name was Zach Smith, would he even be in the NFL at this point?
No.
No. Correct.
Although I think his name probably even drove him down to the fifth round because there were a lot of people like, I'm not putting up with this mess.
I don't want to deal with Pappy. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not dealing with this noise. I don't need it. I don't want it. Cleveland, what do you have to lose?
Right. And I like how they were talking about how Cleveland has this young foundation and it's so exciting and they can't even muster more first downs than the Bears have points touchdowns. Or whatever it was. Yeah, right. Touchdowns, yeah. And meanwhile, the Bears have Loveland, Burden, Trapillo, and I feel like there was a guy on the defensive side that's a young draft pick that was making a difference in the game that was actually playing, and they were trying to hype up Cleveland's young core, which can't do jack shit.
Right. Which lost to Tennessee.
And by the way, I want to talk about, because I've seen Bears fans feeling bad for Cleveland. Why?
Who?
We are Cleveland.
Right. You don't need to feel bad.
Did they feel bad for you when Fields started his first game and it was a fucking embarrassment?
No. They did not.
No, not for a second. I wish the Bears would have put up 60 on them on Sunday.
Could have. Probably should have, but it's fine.
So it's fine. 31, I'll live with 31-3. Sam, it's a favorite score of mine because that's what the Giants mooned the Bears by in 91 in the divisional round.
Well, was that what the – I thought that was like 35-0.
No, it's 31-3.
That was a bad day.
It was.
I remember that day. I believe that was the day my uncle first took me to Maxwell Street, too.
Where you first developed the taste for giant peppers.
Big peppers. Yeah.
No, back then they had the right peppers, John.
Oh, okay.
1991. This is the proper Maxwell Street flea market, jewelry, black porn, the whole thing. I distinctly remember getting mooned at the Meadowlands. That thing was over like 10 minutes in.
Yeah.
Like even at my, I was nine then or whatever, like even my, you know, you're wide eyed, always supporting them. You always rooting for the Bears. You always think they're going to win. Even mine's like, oh, this is not going to go well. Anyway, we're getting off track.
And it didn't.
And it didn't.
Also, I think it's worth pointing out that the Shador Express was derailed by the Bears' defense, which is largely horrible.
Well, apparently now it's been rediscovered, and they're trying to...
They've been playing better.
They haven't played better, but you know what? I mean...
I'm not going to buy into it. He is that bad.
Yeah, he's terrible. I mean, awful. Dennis Allen confused him greatly, and obviously he had those two big throws, which who cares?
And I do feel like those big throws were basically Dennis saying, you can go ahead and do that if you could make that
exactly.
throw.
Go ahead and do it.
Yeah.
Which is fine.
Yeah. Right. Because I know you can't stack up anything.
You can't do two in a row, and he was right.
Hey. So yeah. And I do want to give flowers to Andrew because I think he's been on this Shador is garbage from the get go. So there you go.
You're getting flowers, Slack.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent.
Yeah, there's not too much to add to it, you know. I mean, okay, yeah, Shador sucks, but the Bears made him look the worst he's looked.
Yep.
They couldn't.
And that entire stat line, if you're scouting that, that's all garbage time too.
Right. But
And Kevin Stefanski, suck my dick for taking that time out, by the way.
Yeah, that was terrible. I liked how the game ended. First of all, I want to give a shout out to the coaching staff for getting the team extremely ready to play this particular game because of the trap nature of it. They didn't show for 1 second that they were thinking about something else. But the second the game ended, you had Grady Jarrett, who, by the way, is one of my favorite interviews ever. I don't know if anyone watches the player press conferences during the week, but his today was particularly delightful. It's me walking off the field saying, we're coming for Green Bay, like just immediately. They get in the locker room, they get the game ball to DeMarco Jackson, and the first thing he said was, we owe them one next week. Like that's impressive to be able to focus on the game you had, whoop their ass, and then immediately just say, all right, that's out of the way. Let's get to the real stuff. A lot of focus in that group.
Loved it.
Now I'm getting ahead of myself and worried about the Niners game being a trap game now.
Well, like you've said all along, and we've said it multiple times, win Saturday and Niners game isn't as important.
Right. Hopefully. I mean, 11 wins is just...
Yeah, we'll get there, Sam.
Right, we'll get there. But like, and I've said this on the real show, though. No one wants them to lose the last three games, and no one certainly wants to deal with the takes that will follow if they do. But this team having 10 wins is such a huge step. Like, where, other than John, where did you see it written by anyone that the Bears would win 10 games before the season?
I don't know. Does Rosenbloom still do the bit?
We don't know.
But if you're lining up with Rosenbloom's vision, you know it's something ridiculous.
Quote, unquote.
Right. I don't know where Rosenbloom would do the bit. Isn't he retired?
Kinda.
I mean, he's been retired for a while, but... It's so, like, I'm not saying that means I don't care about what happens on Saturday night. We know that's not the case, or what happens the rest of the season, but, like, you do have to take a step back and be like, they've won 10 games, and not with, like, a lot of gimmicks, you know, and smoke and mirrors like we saw years ago, you know, like, this is all real. These are 10 wins. You can point to the schedule and the backup QBs and all the other stuff we hear, but, like, the schedule was the schedule before the season. Like, it was, you know, and people, no one was saying, oh, they'll win 10 of these.
Exactly. Exactly right, because it's not easy to do. And if it was, everybody would do it.
Right. The Bears would do it more than once a decade.
Yeah, every fourth-place team with a fourth-place schedule would win 10 games if that was how easy it is.
Right.
It doesn't work
that way.
No, it doesn't. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, this is a team with one of the best running games in the league. They've got no fear of playing in weather. They have a quarterback who can rip throws. They've got a coach who's pretty smart. And they've got a team, a defense that makes a lot of takeaways. So to me, that sounds like a potentially dangerous playoff team. I don't know. Seems pretty good.
The team no one wants to play.
we'll worry about that when we get there, and they're going to get there, I think. I hope. I mean, I think they will, but...
I mean, they kind of there's going to be no better whack at the team up north than on Saturday with Parsons and potentially Watson out,
right
at home,
and multiple other guys that we don't need to name, but their injury list is a mile long.
Indeed. As we pivot to looking ahead instead of looking back, John, what is our pig's blood supply at the moment?
Fully loaded.
You go to Peoria. You go to Peoria Packing. Walk in the cooler and just get a big 55
gallon
drum.
Get yourself a tub.
I'm a little concerned about the wide receiver room.
Yeah, I am too. It feels like he's going to have one guy and two tight ends to throw to.
Going to make Colston line up in the slot. Speaking of, by the way, real quick, did you see his little chip on Garrett?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. Good stuff.
Such good stuff.
But the Browns have the young and promising core. Yeah. Don't forget.
Right.
Well, they had Mason Graham, but Jonah Jackson buried him 12 feet under the ground, so he's dead.
He's part of soldiers.
And Colston Loveland was yapping at him too, former teammate.
Yeah.
He hoffed him at Soldier Field. He's there now. I guess there's one little concern I want to bring up, and this is just going forward. But you know, this is now the fourth time, it's twice with Kyler, we've seen an important player either rushed back or not handled properly with injuries. We saw in week two with Jalen and Kyler, lost them for weeks. Kyler gets hurt in pregame warmups. Same thing with Rome. I guess that kind of bothers me a little bit because this was not a game you need to rush anyone back. This is a minor complaint.
Yeah.
Kyler just gets hurt. I understand that. You know, that's his thing. But you know, Ben comes from a place in Detroit that is always a mash unit by the time December rolls around. And now, you know, it would really help to have Rome Saturday night, and it doesn't look like they're gonna. But that's just something I'm gonna keep an eye on in the years to come, you know, how more often this happens.
The other impossible thing to know is that if they sat him out, would it have made any difference?
We'll never know.
Right.
And we never know about week two. You know, maybe Kyler and Jalen don't play that day, and then they come in the next week. It's like, you know what, this isn't getting any better, and you guys need to go have surgery or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, we don't know. But that's my one semi-red flag. It's the only thing I'm feeling antsy enough about. I mean, more than my normal angst about a Packers week, because they're just not fun. They're not enjoyable. Even when I'm confident, and the reason I'm confident, like I am this week, that doesn't mean I'm going to enjoy the lead-up to it or the game itself. It's never fun.
Speak for yourself.
Oh, you're enjoying all this. Your pig's blood and your war paint.
Yeah. Witness me. I do have a kind of an overarching NFL thought before we segue into
whatever else.
That I kind of wanted to talk about. I was thinking about it during that just dreadful Monday night game last night. As how the NFL season works these days.
Hamsters are off, John. John.
Correct, or if there are holes in it.
John, you're gonna have to reset. You're gonna have to re-rack that one because the hamsters fell off the wheel right after you said, right after you were gonna let
your
us know
overarching thought.
Your thesis.
Oh boy.
I didn't dive into it yet, so
you're gonna have to climb into the router.
No, I wanted to talk through with you. I was thinking about this last night during the Monday night game in terms of the NFL season in general these days and how it works, and just watching that just god awful game last night. So tell me if I'm wrong here in this. I feel like the NFL season now, the first eight games are basically a complete crapshoot in terms of you don't know who your team is or what you are. So even if you are a quote-unquote blue blood, you still kind of have to prove yourself, but you are fully capable of losing to a complete dog shit team.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think that's true.
For reason, just the way the preseason works now, the way that training camp is, the amount of times they limit you in terms of physical practices. So that's, you got your first 8 weeks. So that's where you're kind of feeling yourself out. And then from 8 to 12 weeks, that's where things start to separate a little. And that's where you get the teams that kind of rise to the top. And then the ones that are kind of in the hunt, so to speak. and then the complete dog shit kind of stays at the bottom. And then basically from 12 to 18, you know who the playoff teams are, and then who the bottom feeders are, and then the 4 to 8 teams battling for those last wildcard spots are, that's kind of where they find their way in 12 to 18. Similar to the, well, not similar, it's different than the hockey season, which we've always said is a sprint until Thanksgiving, and then everything kind of coasts up until about February, and then that's where things kind of turn up again. Am I crazy in that analysis? Because I was thinking about it with Pittsburgh, and I just do not understand how that team always has 8 wins at this time of season, and you just because watch them, and
their division
awful.
Is ass.
I know, but I was looking at their schedule yesterday, Andrew, and I mean, they beat New England in like week 3. And they had some decent wins at the beginning of the season, but I bet you if you go back through Tomlin's last 5 to 7 years there, they were winning six out of their first 8 like almost every year. And you look back and there're probably some decent wins in there where they beat some decent teams, but they're just, those teams haven't really found themselves yet. They're still kind of finding their footing, and I guess my point is that Pittsburgh is not a team you want to play at the beginning of a season, but please put them on your schedule at the end of the year.
I see what you mean.
Yeah.
Well, the caveat to your theory is how injured these teams are by the time week 12, week 14 rolls around. So you might be one of these playoff teams that's ready to separate itself, but you've got 5 squeegee holders on your various lines and some parking lot attendant playing safety. So I think mostly it's okay. I think because you have teams that are still figuring out who they are, like the Bears, or you have teams like Buffalo and others who know kind of how good they are and what they have to take seriously and what they don't.
Right. And even the ones that they do at that point of the season, they can say, well, it's not that big of a deal if we lose this one.
Right.
I think Pittsburgh also has continuity on its side. I don't think it can be understated necessarily. I know people are sick of Tomlin, but you got the same guy who instills the same kind of standards every year. So there's not going to be this huge
famously the standard is the standard with him.
Right. Yes. And that's why they're always so tough at the beginning of the season where they win, like I said, their first 5 of 6 or whatever. And that's why they always stack up those wins at the beginning of the season. And then by the end of the year, you see them. And if Pittsburgh, you know, we'll see how it shapes out. But what I saw yesterday, there's just no way that there are any sort of contender for the AFC powers that be.
Yeah, but Buffalo could fall asleep like they tend to do, and then
they could. But Houston would
how
just...
that guy isn't fucking fired yet.
Who? Houston would bury
McDermott.
Aaron.
I mean, they're 10-4. It's not like,
but inexplicable. Like, yeah, I don't know.
No, I know, it all shakes out in the wash, you know? Like, it's, you see these blips, the kind of like lulls in the season, or you're watching a game and you're like, how the fuck did they lose by 17 points to Miami, who looks like they couldn't, you know, catch a cold?
Mm-hmm.
That apparently even Troy Aikman's sensibilities were just aghast at last night. So
Tua is more cooked than a pot of linguine.
Well, his brain scrambled.
Well, his arm is also scrambled.
Well, yeah, he was always a rag arm, though.
He stinks. He fucking sucks, man.
Yeah, it's unwatchable.
Yeah, it's horrible. And also, like, if your defense is giving up that many touchdowns to the Steelers, you are a joke. Like, thing about the Steelers is when I watch
them... Isn't that guy supposed to be a head coaching, like, prospect? Their DC?
Arthur Smith?
No, the DC of Miami.
Yeah.
Oh, I have no idea.
Yeah,
supposedly. I think about Pittsburgh's offense. Last night they had 2 tight ends score rushing touchdowns. That is so offensive to me.
And how many throws were between 1 to 4 yards?
We saw it when we played them. That's all Rudolph did, and that's why they lost. They couldn't move it in big chunks, and they just ran out of time. Like,
right.
I don't know. I mean, I get that they started putting up points at the end, and like DK made some good yak for him, but it's just... It's so offensive to watch Pittsburgh play, and it grinds you down. And that's probably part of their strategy because It's you just don't want to be there. I don't want to watch it.
Yeah, especially if you're like a bad or middling team. Like, there's just no way that I could see them that strategy working on a team like Houston or even Buffalo, New England. Like, all of those teams, all you have to do is make your tackles, make your plays, and they're right. not gonna score more than 20 points on you max.
And that's the thing, right? The Bears beat that team. I get that Rodgers was hurt. But the Bears scored 31 points on that team.
And spotted them 7 points.
They just gave
them a touchdown. They gave them a touchdown, yeah.
I think you're right. I guess we really need to clear that out, and we need them to win on Sunday. So let's
Saturday.
Let's put our animosity aside, and I'm a Steelers fan on Saturday because –
our good friend Aaron needs to win. Oh, we need
them. They play on Sunday, yes.
Yeah,
Sunday.
Yeah.
As long as the Lions lose, I think everything ends up somewhat okay. So go Pittsburgh.
Well, yeah. I mean, I want Sam to meditate specifically on this theory I have of the NFL season. So you get back to me on that.
I'll ruminate.
Yeah, thank
you. I'll ponder. I think it has some – I mean, I see what you're getting at, that – you know, teams coming out of training camp are just not fully formed. And it takes, I think saying the first 8 weeks might be pushing it, maybe the first 4 to 6. But I get what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, there's just too many wacky outcomes.
I think the NFL is so silly and so stupid. Trying to put any overarching theory on it, it's probably folly.
Yeah, it'll work for one season and then it's gone. Yeah,
right. Because there are too many. There aren't enough good players for all the teams that there are. Let's just face it, there aren't. And then everyone gets hurt, and there are a bunch of dumbass coaches out there. So, like, you know, it's all ass. I mean, every year we come here and we say, like, this league is mediocre. There's like one good team and everyone else stinks. And we've been saying it all year this year. It's like, okay, the Rams, they're probably pretty good. They're hardly like anywhere near the best teams I've ever seen, you know? And like, but like, I feel like this year, especially, it's not even just the Bears. Like, people are like, oh, the Broncos are the first clinch. And everyone's like, yeah, they suck. That's not a real thing. You know, like, and then who is it? It's not the Bears in the NFC, but like people, the Patriots, you know, people are like, nah, it's not real, you know, then they go ahead and blow a 21 point lead at home. So I don't know.
Yeah, I think done. That's hard to come back from. Blowing a 21 point lead to your division rival at this close to the end of the season. We'll see how it shakes out. I mean, they have a pretty soft ending, a pretty cushy landing here for their last three games.
They do. Big time. Yeah.
I think the playoffs will be interesting to see. To me, that's a hard way to come back. I just don't know how you blow that lead against that team and then all of a sudden turn it around when games matter again.
Well,
like, that's always going to be festering in the back of their minds.
The AFC playoff thing is actually really fun because you're looking at some new blood in there, but also like a lot of guys who are kind of having their story written now. Bo Nix, obviously Drake May, sort of entering the chat, so to speak. Herbert finally potentially playing in a game that matters for the first time in a while. Josh Allen's decks are clear. His enemies are not going to be there. You know, and of course, Aaron fuckhead Rodgers will be around. And then Trevor Lawrence, who had the worst half and then the best half simultaneously. There's just a lot of, I find that fascinating as a neutral. That'll be a lot of fun to watch. And of course, I guess CJ Stroud will be there as well. So Brad
Bates
can jerk his little chode off watching that.
I mean, that defense is pretty
terrifying.
Yeah.
Defense is real.
And as usual, the Houston Texans playing on the first playoff game of the playoff season in an unwatchable slop fest, which is a tradition unlike any other.
Yep. It wouldn't be the playoffs without it.
Yeah. And if it was the Texans versus the Bengals, it would be even more so, but it's not going to be the case this year.
No, they're the first game. It's at 3:30. It's always like 2 degrees here.
Uh-huh.
So you stay inside and you're like, all right, I'm going to bundle up on the couch, make a big pot of something or make a lot of food so I don't have to move. And it's always a Saturday.
It's always a Saturday.
And you're like, ABC, shit, I got to watch the Texans.
It's on some channel that never hosts football. It's on Power 50 or something. Gross.
All right. Well, before we segue to whatever else it is we do, as John so eloquently put it. All right, John, how's it happen on Saturday?
I mean, Sam, come on.
No, you got to tell me how it's
You're stalling. You're stalling, motherfucker.
This is the most confident I've felt in a Bears-Packers game probably since 2018 when in the second game where they had the chance to clinch the division. I think the Bears probably win this pretty comfortably.
I'll never feel comfortable when you say that.
Don't worry. Andrew will have his schmilkus by like Thursday and everybody will feel better about that.
It's already basically Wednesday.
If Slack doesn't have a schmilkus this weekend, that's when I really get nervous.
I don't know if I'm going to get it for this, honestly.
The vibes coming out of the vibes from Green Bay and just the getting them like this. By the way, I this was another thing in my yellow pad that I wanted to talk about because like Andrew just mentioned the aforementioned Brad Biggs. We're talking about this quirk in the schedule about playing Green Bay twice in 3 weeks. Hey fuckos. Look at the rest of the NFL and what those games are. It's clearly not a quirk. This is clearly done intentionally where they have Green Bay and Chicago playing twice in 3 weeks. They got Philadelphia and Washington playing twice in 3 weeks. They've got Pittsburgh and Baltimore playing twice in, I think, 3 weeks as well.
Might be four weeks for them. But, yeah, there's
clearly, by design, they did it this way.
I'm not sure why. I mean,
it's pretty entertaining stuff.
I think the reason why, well, I don't know if this was the intention, Sam, but I feel like it's because when there's that familiarity, that's when then the games get really physical and nasty.
Yeah.
The way that the Bears came out of that Cleveland game and the way that Green Bay came out of the Denver game, and then just the way that game ended up in Lambeau with the Bears kind of not having their way, but really establishing themselves. And I think Caleb got a ton of confidence out of that second half. I just think that, if it's a 24-14 win again, it would not surprise me.
And John, I'll have you know that Ben already said today that they're going back to watch last year's Green Bay's defense for understanding what they're up against. So.
Of course. Ben knows. He's been listening to our texts.
Yep.
He's in the thread.
Mm-hmm. He rated us 5 stars on
He sure did, Stitcher. With his shirt off.
Right. Well, he got turned onto it because Hoag played him an episode for him.
That's right. when they were both in Scarsdale,
Yeah, you know, John, I'm trying to keep myself grounded a little bit. It's certainly not the overwhelming feeling of dread, which has accompanied most of these. But I try and keep in mind, look, it was only a half last time, which you can take either way. You know, they only played really well for a half, and they nearly had the game tied and sent it to overtime. But they have to put 60 minutes together here. You know, haven't always done that. I hate Matt LaFleur, but I'm not going to sit here and tell you he's an idiot. Correct. He's clearly not.
He's a diped, competent coach.
Yeah. Right. Extremely diped. Yeah, there's definitely things to be worried about. I'm not 100% in my confidence. I don't think I ever will be. Yeah. Right.
They're hurt on offense now instead of being hurt on defense.
Correct, yeah.
But that's, that's the NFL. That's the deal. So are they. It's certainly a different prospect without Micah out there. But I don't feel like the Bears had their game wrecked by him entirely the last time.
He influenced it in the first half.
He influenced it.
Yeah.
But he didn't destroy it.
Mm-mm. No, it wasn't like a Max Crosby game.
Yeah. Or a Max Crosby half, at least.
Right.
I would like 24-14. I'd like to not sweat in the fourth quarter because sweat and pig's blood, it doesn't go well.
Yeah, it's hard to breathe.
I'm trying to keep myself grounded because I know that no matter what I do, I'll be in a froth come kickoff. But I don't want to be in a froth on Friday afternoon. I'll need some slack spilkus to keep me grounded. Help keep me grounded. So That's where I'm at. Slack, you want to round this off?
No, we're good.
0-17.
0-17. We will have to have a wellness check on Slack if they do win on Saturday night.
I will be a complete train wreck for the first half, maybe longer, depending on how it's going. But
right after the first drive, it's over. Same shit. Always Bears Packers. It's never any different.
It's just this opponent. That's all it is.
Yeah. Yeah, and in any sport, there's no logic to it.
Yeah, I mean, it used to be like that with the Cardinals, but not anymore. That's dead.
Neither one of them care. So,
I can only hope that the Packers find their way into a modern-day St. Louis Cardinals situation sooner than later.
Yeah, that's hard to do in football, but maybe. You never know.
Maybe.
All right, then. Well, let's pivot. I don't have much to say about tonight's Hawks effort. That's just a team that has no weapons, and it couldn't turn what was actually a really good effort into more than a 2-goal lead, and they found a way to lose because that's what they do.
And let the record show, we are pro Artem Levchinov getting benched for a real reason. That's not being snide. Like, you're a rookie.
You got to be there.
Yeah.
You got to show up on time. It's the easiest thing to do. And the first rule of pretty much every team on earth at every level. So I will start with John here. John, at what point do fans have to start worrying about Frank Nazar?
Well, I think any rational one probably already would be.
Yeah? You're already there?
Yeah, I mean, after the first 10 games or so, Sam, I think he went through that drought, and then he's been hard to notice on a game-to-game basis. It's not like he's a huge difference maker in every game.
I want to say I thought he had a decent game tonight, but it's 21 games without a goal.
Yeah.
The numbers are bad. This is the guy they signed. This is the one they first won. Like, this is part of our future core, CORPS. To make Slack happy.
That
one is actually CORE.
Yes.
Your forward core is CORPS, but whatever.
Right.
Before tonight, I was like, yeah, I was with you, John. I'm not noticing him. I feel like he was turning down shots. And again, it's his first full season, but it's supposed to look better than this.
Well, I mean, 21 games. You said it right. 21 games without a goal.
21 games without a goal.
That seems not good.
Yeah.
Especially, for a player of his pedigree, like you said, somebody who's signed to that extension, somebody that you would identify. Like, we're not talking about a 5-10 game streak here. We're talking about 21 games.
I'm talking basically a month and a half.
Power play unit time.
Right. Exactly. You're talking about a guy getting top minutes, top situations, top men. So, I think you're already there in terms of concern.
And I guess I'm hedging a little bit. I'm hedging a little bit on that just because A, he was hurt and his big weapon is his speed. It was a leg injury. And B, I hated that line configuration that they stuck with for way too long with him and Bertoilet and Moore. I don't think that was doing him any favors as a young centerman. But again, he was getting top power play time where you figure one would bounce in off his ass at a certain point. But there's only one guy apparently can do, or two guys. The human back door will occasionally get one.
I just don't think they have enough good players to have, like, perfect line alignment throughout the lineup. Like someone's going to be short.
You got to change, and that's on Blazil too, to like change it up. He's clearly in a rut. You need more from whatever is beneath Bedard.
Yeah.
Like, you shouldn't have stuck with that for that long. And he looked in the little bit that I saw tonight, cause I was in transit. Like, again, Burakovsky makes a lot of stuff hit. Like, he's just being a pro and an adult facilitates a lot of stuff and gets a lot of space. And he's always, he knows where his bread is buttered. And but of course, the, you know, four shifts that I watched, fucking Bertoilet fell down three times. So
he loves to fall down.
Yeah, but let you know how hard he's trying.
Maybe he got spooked being back in Toronto, where I think he was as bad could be.
I mean, that's a really bad Toronto team that Dennis Green let off the hook.
Oh, no, they would have had to fire Berube if they had lost that.
But you saw it coming a mile away. Once they took that penalty, it was like, oh.
I mean, I saw it once it was 2-1, I'm like, yeah, they're not going to hold on to this. There's no way. I thought they
might get it to OT and lose in overtime, but I didn't expect the 8-second gap there. That was impressive.
Yeah. Are we the only ones who don't like Louis Crevier? Are we the only ones?
I mean, we've had to do that. Apparently. I mean, how many times have we had to do this dance over Lothi's nearly 20 years, Sam?
Okay. Let me chime in as the least informed member of this podcast in this regard here.
Louis Crevier fan club.
If you remember, poorly marketed Louis Crevier. If you watch just that play, like, I would probably rather take a bunch of pills in my hotel room than sit for a film session the next day. That is so bad.
Right.
You just let a guy beat you on a shot from 60 feet away.
Not a guy. Dakota Joshua, who can't do anything.
Yeah, I didn't even know that was a person. Who is that?
He scored 20 goals no one cares about for the fucking Vancouver Canucks a couple years ago. So predictably, he got $5 million from the Leafs because they're tough
now. That's horrific. But the point is that even if it's, I don't care if it's Austin Matthews, like, you literally just get in his way. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, he the first goal is off a draw that they had to take because he screws up with Spencer Knight. I mean, does this every, like, look, I've acquiesced to the point where, like, okay, if he's a third pairing guy, I'll live with it. But if Kevin Korchinski does that tonight, he's never seen again anyway. But like he'd be in the ECHL. And it's one of those a night. There's one of those every night with him.
But
it's offensive. Even at 6'8", he's not particularly strong.
He's a defenseman. It's like the defending part is the name of the title.
Right. Like, he's not Chris Pronger. It's not like, oh, he's 6'8", you can't get around him or through him. I mean, you can do both. You know, he's more Shel Samuelson, like, at 6'8". Like, he's just kind of an obelisk. I don't get it.
I think they are enamored with making themselves seem like really smart for finding this seventh round pick.
Right. They want to prove that they can do something other than have
the
top
seventh
five
overall
picks.
Pick is running circles around the league and is probably developing bad habits at this point.
Is he though? Like, I haven't even heard a word about him since training camp. I don't even know what
he's doing.
Because they hate him.
He's toiling away. I mean, he's actually, his offensive output is pretty good. I don't think they give a shit. So
it's just, I don't understand anything about it. I think I'm with Matt and Sam on it. Like, I just don't understand why they, like, again, like, if he was a third pairing guy, somebody that you found at the bottom of the pile that you've turned into, you know, a halfway decent player, when you put him up against, you know, garbage opponents, against more than half the league, he can get you through the night for 12 to 15 minutes. But, you know, insisting on him playing top pairing minutes or going against other teams' top lines, no. What are we doing? That's not going to work.
And you're also, again, you're not helping out your purported number one, the first guy you ever committed to. Again, another show their geniusness signing. In Alex Vlasic, which, again, he's a number four on a good team.
He's a whole other discussion.
Do we want to get into it?
We'll get into that another time.
A few more games. I mean, you're going to find out just how bad this thing is without 98.
Well, that's what I was afraid of with tonight. Because, you know, they get this win, if they close them out 2-0, and they get Craig Berube fired, which would be hilarious. Although I never want him to stop coaching the Leafs, honestly. You know, it's like, all right, maybe they can, like, not be totally embarrassed for this next 3 weeks, month, however long it is. You know, but to lose that, like, that's as good a chance as you're going to get. I feel like now it could get really ugly. because they're like their teeth are going to be chattering anytime they have a third period lead.
Yeah. Well, and then yeah. Lachille will be on, and will be just all about defending that lead.
Oh no, it's gonna be the most boring shit ever. For now, he's gonna get very points chasey.
I thought they did a good job of not doing that tonight. Like I thought they were pretty aggressive, and then
yeah, they were heading shots until the last four minutes of the game. Yeah.
And the first goal goes in, and you know, okay, fluke shot from the blue line, that happens sometimes, whatever. But then yeah, it just you know, okay, Nylander and Matthews make a play. On the power play, as bad as their power play been, that's going to happen, you know. But then, like, well, we went over it. What I don't know. Slack, you have apparently America's favorite segment, Nugget.
Hell yes.
Yeah, I do.
I literally need everyone to, because you might actually, like, again, I'm medicated now, so, like, I might actually die on, well, this will never get out. Unless you guys are recording, like, local copies here.
All right, so if you're not hearing this. McClure has died.
Well, yeah, someone please, you can use my, I've got biometrics on my PC here at home. You should be able to harvest the hard drive from the.
All right,
cyberpunk stuff there. This is a post from 7 hours ago by Buttface Murphy on Our Hawks. That's a picture of Bob Probert getting punched in the face by a New York Rangers player who I can't really tell who it is, but I bet you John could. Any idea who that is, John?
Ty Domi, Sandy McCarthy.
No.
It's neither of those guys. No. Looks like it starts with an L.
I don't know who this is. It's like a 15, yeah. And it looks like it's
Sandy
not
McCarthy wore 15.
I know, but it's not Sandy fucking McCarthy. Jesus.
His last name starts with LAM.
Yeah, whatever. So anyway, here's the headline. While Bedard is out, Hawks need to find an enforcer to protect the smaller skill guys. And then he writes, ... try this again, ... I don't give any shits about AI, but I didn't want it to derail my genuine question. Hope this is better, or do you boys hate old school as well? Anyways, who are some realistic players that could be acquired to protect the young skill guys, but not be a hole in the lines? A tough guy that can play, ... So either the person that wrote this is like 88 years old, or brain dead, or from both. Like Latvia, I can't tell.
This isn't as infuriating. Like this is.
Oh no,
just...
there's another one that I saw, Andrew, that definitely would probably kill Matt. But
this wasn't the one you were thinking of.
No, it's another one. But we'll wait until the show's done, and then we'll tell it off the air. And then if all Matt right. dies, at least the show will get out.
Well, hold on. There's the I like to do this. I filter by controversial comments because that means people are voting it up and voting it down. Kelly Cush writes, when will enforcers die, LOL? Which, to be fair, is a great question.
I mean, they do constantly.
Yeah. Right after they retire, usually, yeah.
No. Okay, that's not what he meant, but a very good joke. And the response here, IDK, but Florida has won 2 cups in a row.
What does that mean?
I don't know. Apparently, they have a bunch of enforcers, and that's how they've won 2 cups.
Is the enforcer. By the way,
a complete misunderstanding of what everything is. I want to
maybe clarify Buttface Murphy's comment here and asking who the Ranger is punching Probert. When he mentions AI, is this AI slop photo?
Probably.
Oh my God. What if it is?
I think it might be.
I think it absolutely is.
You can't find a regular picture of Probert being punched in the face. It happened a lot. Yeah.
Oh my God. It is AI, John. That is horrible.
And then the AI actually got Brent Sutter in the background.
Like it does look like Brent Sutter, but it looks Sutter's like there's multiple likeness. Brent Sutters.
Yeah. No, this is from Sports Illustrated. This is not AI. Oh, no, because okay. I just literally Google image search Brent Sutter or Bob Probert punched in face, and this is the first thing that comes up. I'm seeing this.
It's a Ranger?
Yeah.
LAM or something?
Yeah,
15.
And it looks like Probert's got Easton slash guards on, Cooper elbow pad. Like if it were AI, all that would be...
It's Darren Langdon.
Oh, okay.
So we figured it out.
All right. Well, it's not AI. So I don't know what the fuck.
If you want an enforcer on the Hogs, why would you pick one of him getting fed?
I don't know.
I think this is just someone who is old, concussed, and Christmas drunk.
Yeah, that's disgusting. And, hey, that's and okay. Your median Hawks fan
and
right there.
Probably, and And he's probably a cop somewhere.
Probably. All right.
All right.
Well, I have a couple decent Cretan questions I want to get to. John's excited about one because it involves going back to the archives. So, friend of the program, Jay Zawoski. Where would he go here?
Is he actually listening?
He must be. Well, he answered the clarion call once I can find it, which I apparently can't find it.
I forgot.
And he knows the bit, too, about us talking about the beloved.
Yeah. Hang on. Efforting. Okay, here we go. Sorry about that. When is the last time you remember watching an important Bears game, which Sunday was, with very little stress or frustration? I couldn't think of an answer to this while watching the game on Sunday. It's a good question. Because there haven't been many important Bears games, and we've usually been white-knuckling it through them all.
I had 100% confidence in their ability to beat the living shit out of Brew Drees and the Saints for the NFC Championship game. They were not losing that game.
That was 20 years ago.
I know, yes, but still.
And there was no stress or frustration, even when Reggie took it 90 yards or whatever on the swing pass. Okay.
Yeah, but it's an NFC Championship game. And there's built-in stress, right?
Nope.
You didn't think so?
Nope.
Okay.
I did not like their prospects, knowing that it was either New England or the Colts on the other side of it, like teams that they could beat, but like not, you know,
getting the Saints on a miserable day at Soldiers. Yeah.
With what they wanted to do, no.
I was obviously very inebriated in public for that game, but I I do remember having a very good time. I don't remember like clenching my butt cheeks until
I was collapsed. More nervous for the Seahawks game because they were defending NFC champs. They, you know, the Bears had lost in the division round the year before, so that's how I was able to get tickets so cheap because everyone Spilkas had gotten so out of hand they didn't want to be there for them to lose.
Well, and that was a much closer game too.
It was.
I think I think Matt's got a good answer there. The other one that popped to mind, but we weren't probably conscious enough to remember it, would be the Super Bowl in 20. Super Bowl 20.
I don't remember it, so it doesn't count.
From what I've heard, it was a very stress-free game, other than Walter fumbling in the first 5 seconds and then New England not gaining a yard, and then everybody's like, okay, this is over.
The game where they knocked Favre out, I feel like, was pretty relaxing because, like, that Vikings team wasn't good. The Bears were good. It was just like, they're going to.
Is a season opener an important game?
Sure.
I would say probably from that season, that 2006 season, that season opener in Lambeau, that never was in doubt when they beat them 26-0. And zero frustration. They mooned them up and down the field.
Yeah. The one I thought of was when they clinched the division in Lambeau on Christmas Day, which was the season before, I believe.
That got a little stressful, though, at the end.
Did it?
Yeah. Because you had the Spilkas. You still had the Lambeau Spilkas at that point.
I don't think John knows I want to mention the Minnesota game at the end of the Nagy year, but, like, the Bears didn't have anything riding on that.
That's not an important game. Yeah, that's not an important game.
It was still tons of fun. But, yeah. Yeah, 24-17.
There's a lot of caveats there that you gotta consider. I think Matt's got the best answer.
I think Matt's got the right one. Jay brings up a good point. There aren't a lot of these.
No.
Well, I'm guessing that was ultimately his point.
Yeah. But he knows we like to go back in the archives and talk about old bad Bears football. So.
I mean, we already did once tonight, and I already pulled up the Wikipedia rundown.
The
for
other
it.
One that I thought of, but again, this got stressful at the end, was the Jays' first playoff game in 2010 when that god-awful Seattle team came into town and they put 28 up on them in the first, you know, two quarters, but then they let them crawl back into it and it got itchy at the end. That one, I would say, would have been the perfect answer, the most recent one for sure, because that Seahawks team, I think, won like six or seven games.
7-9, yeah. Well, they just had the Beast Quake the week prior.
Right. They mooned Seattle in in Seattle.
No, there was the Saints. That was none other than Alex Brown catching the wrong end of the Beastquake highlight too.
Yeah. So I would say that that one would have been the most recent one, but unfortunately the Bears made that game close because they let him come back. And they had, I think they had to end up recovering an onside kick or something to close it out, which is just infuriating.
Okay. Greedy McDonuts. What's the best new music you've heard this year? Slack was just last week complaining about sort of this, but.
You clearly are not paying attention to the intro music from like a lot of the, episodes here. There is a Spotify playlist, even though Spotify is evil. It's what everyone does. I don't pay for it. You shouldn't either. I don't know. I liked, again, the new Homefront record that came out a couple weeks ago. Really fun stuff.
The D Spitz record has been making the rounds for the whole thread.
Okay, there you go. As far as things I've heard for the first time this year, bands I've heard for the first time this year, yeah, I guess that would qualify since I just heard about it like this week.
According to Tidal, I mean, the album I played the most was the new Wet Leg album, which came out in July, but that's not that new. They've been around for a bit. But that's what's been going around here. Matt, an internet friend, not Matt, our producing friend, does it matter at all for the rebuild if Frondell is a center or wing? As long as he's good at one of them, I don't think it matters.
I think it matters if he can if he's a like easy first liner or not.
Yeah, it would be great if he could play both.
If he's a center, it might behoove Frank on a wing.
I don't know if Frank translates to wing as well as Bedard does.
Frank on the wing.
Frank.
All right.
Greg Landry, longtime guy. What is your least favorite pasta shape? I have to say fettuccine. Sounds about right.
Angel hair.
Yeah, angel hair sucks. Fusilli Jerry.
Yeah, angel hair, I'll go with that. But Fusilli Jerry is an honorable mention.
So you like Fusilli, but you don't like it when it's shaped like Jerry.
Yes.
Okay.
Bucatini, number one.
Yep. Bucatini haters.
Yeah. Angel hair
mad.
Sucks ass. Yeah.
Bucatini and then penne.
I've seen people talk shit about Bucatini and it makes me angry.
I mean, everything does.
It does. It's how I live.
Jay Gregory just wants to warm up to us. This is the last one. Have you ever seen more angst around Caleb's completion percentage as the number one criteria for if he's playing well? Sure, he's missed some throws, but he can't catch the ball as well. And he does what every armchair critic preaches he does, wants them to, which is throw the ball away and not turn it over.
Yep.
Yep. There you go. Yep.
Cannot have it both ways.
You could have a check down bitch merchant if you want. You could have him be a little bitch.
Check down bitch merchant.
Again, because I'm smart and I don't
it's
listen
my
to
my favorite Butthole Surfers record.
Check down bitch merchant.
I don't listen to the Chicago Beat anymore, but I do listen to Ben Johnson. And one of the moronic dipshits asked him, do you ever think about letting Caleb get some easy throws to start the game? He started 0-for-3. And then went 5-for-5. What if you gave him some easy throws to get into a rhythm to start the game? And Ben Johnson, first of all, immediately said, well, one of those was a drop. Thank you, Ben, for watching the game.
Right.
And then he said, we have 60, 70 plays on offense at most in a game. We're not wasting them getting Caleb into a rhythm. We're out there to attack and win. Thank God this man is our coach.
I always prefer my coach to watch the game. I think Jesus that's Christ. Better.
I'm blown away. Like, everybody who watched the game saw a screen pass hit Kyle Manungai directly in the fucking face and he just dropped. Like, I don't know what else to say. I really don't. I don't know how you look at Caleb Williams and ask him to do more there, but whatever.
And be worried about the completion percentage.
The throw was easy and he put it right where he's supposed to. There
right,
you go.
Right.
Kiss my ass.
Mm-hmm. Suck my dick.
Everybody.
What else? You got
that's
more?
All, that's all I got. All
right, I'll start with a few quick fires here. Hooked on Chronics, aka Blaze Weedman, says Bears, to which I reply Bears.
Bears, yes.
Bears. Friggin' Dingus replies more of a comment than a question, but Bears, and I reply Bears.
All caps, Bears.
Mike Rantis says, and I interpreted this two ways. He said, name a place on the earth you wouldn't mind being hit by a meteorite. Now, the first time I read this, I thought, Am I being hit by the meteorite?
That's exactly what I thought. Do I have to go there to be hit by a meteorite?
So I would like to be in the White House for that.
Right.
But the question is actually name a place on the Earth that you wouldn't mind being hit by a meteorite. So the place is getting hit by the meteorite. So I will say the White House.
Your answer is the same both times.
Yes. White House, yeah. Columbus, Ohio. And
remember, does anyone remember there's a thing that that came out a couple years ago where it's like it was a literal like theoretical blast radius calculation for like the size of the meteorite and where it would hit and like where the like incineration zones would be. And then I showed everyone like how small the meteor would have to be for us to be all right if it hit St. Louis.
That's, I mean, I know people always say, oh, there's a lot of good people down there and it's pretty. But if you were to just take out most of the South, a lot of our problems go away.
Name the meteor Sherman.
Right. So I'm going to go ahead. I'm sorry to the nice people who apparently live there, the South.
Wow. That's a big meteor.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's not as big as you think, but it's big.
Land doesn't vote. All right.
You know, well, I mean, I don't want to lose, you know, if I have to lose New Orleans in this, you know, it sucks. I love New Orleans, but that's life. But, you know, well, let's land it right on Brett Favre's volleyball stadium and just see how much more it takes out.
All right. John said nobody should be hit by a meteor. So good for you, John.
Yep.
I told you he's a man of peace. Yeah. Yeah.
Man of love and peace. Peace and love.
All right. I got a few more. I'll start with this one. Robert asks, realistically, best case scenario, when are they a playoff team again, referring to the Hawks? And realistically, best case scenario, when are they a cup contender again?
When they have a real hockey man leading the team in the general manager chair. And when they're a playoff team again, well, it could have potentially been this year if Bedard had stayed healthy.
Yeah.
Realistically, 2028. Right.
A regular playoff team, maybe by 2028.
Well, Sam. I would say they're a playoff team next year if Bedard doesn't get hurt, but that's no way to build a team. Like,
right.
You can't just say this guy can't get hurt or we're fucked.
There's going to be too many questions.
I would think realistically next year they are the team that competes for a playoff spot but falls short, gets like 90 points.
Yeah.
So you're saying if Bedard's healthy, Brondell, Kantsarov, they're all going to be point-per-game players or on the top line.
Them.
Contributors.
Heavy contributors,
60,
for sure.
60 to 70 points. Well, you're talking about having a team full of Calder Trophy candidates.
They're all going to win the Rookie of the Year award together.
Well,
Sam Renzel, because he hasn't hit 25 games yet, has he?
That's right, man.
He's still counting on
Renzel and Levchenov to take huge steps forward. That's a realistic timeline. If they don't meet it, people need to be fired.
Well, yeah. I mean, if that's what we've been saying. So, I mean, we're beyond. If we're us in charge, we'd be beyond.
Right.
Beyond the.
As far as a realistic cup
in three games in Rockford, by the way, that's fun. I didn't know that until just now. Renzel has 4 points in three games in Rockford.
Yeah, he's getting his sword back with the puck.
He's found his
good,
level.
Fine. I think we all agree he's too good for the AHL.
Clearly.
As far as realistic cup contender, oh, geez, I don't know, 29, 30, never.
Yeah,
it's impossible to know at this point.
I would say it's got to be a minimum of 4 or 5 years, right?
I mean, you know, you look at all these young teams that are like slowly moving forward in the playoffs, like, okay, they become playoff teams, but none of them look like future, you know, the cup contender, whoever your list, Detroit, Ottawa, Utah, I'm leaving one out here, Montreal,
Anaheim, San Jose.
Well, Anaheim's the one where I'm like, okay, I could sort of see it.
Right. They're a couple acquisitions away probably from being a cup contender by next year.
Right. Or at least the year after.
And I think San Jose is already on the path too.
They've got a long way to go. But, like, Celebrini's been involved in half of their goals, literally half.
And he can stay healthy.
For now.
Right. Well,
if he gets hurt, they're sinking to the bottom just as fast as the Hawks are about to. Good times. All right. Which of the prospects, this is from pre-compt, which of the prospects coming up do you want to succeed? But realistically, who do you think will succeed?
Are these the ones that haven't played an NHL game yet?
I think so. Confusing question, but realistically, which of the people who have not played, I'm going to rewrite the question here.
Okay.
Which of the prospects who have not yet made an NHL appearance for this team do you think will realistically, whatever your definition of success is, who would you peg as the number one person in that
group?
I
haven't seen any of them play, so.
Yeah. I mean, Frondell seems like a very high floor guy, so there you go.
Who asked this?
Pre-compt.
Pre-compt. Can we bookmark this, and can I answer it after the World Juniors?
Sure.
And then I'll tell you.
If you're listening, make sure to bring the question back to Sam after World Juniors. Okay. This one is the last one, and I'll let you guys handle this one because it didn't come up during the discussion. Should the Hawks have at least called about Quinn Hughes? Shouldn't Davidson be trying to acquire a superstar or any kind of talent whatsoever?
Yes. Yes.
From, oh, well, I tried at Blue Sky.
I mean, he should have certainly called. I don't know what.
They certainly have the pieces that could have been offered.
They claim to.
Marco Rossi's a really good player.
Yeah, I think they have. They don't have the guys who are like quite at the level of like they're good NHL players already.
Right. They probably feel like they have the package to have gotten.
Zeeb's got to be an incomplete, but like it's the same game as Korchinski, right?
I mean, I'm just talking about like Rossi is a genuine top six NHL player at 23. Other than Bedard, who on the Hawks is that?
No one.
Colton Dock.
Brian Green. You know, I mean, if the Canucks were interested in making up the difference on that in quantity, sure. But, you know, I don't think a package of, let's say, Frondell, Korchinski, a number one, and...
And they just kind of got a handful themselves with the fucking Reichel deal, too, from the...
Right, so... I mean, he should have called. Quinn Hughes is an upgrade for any team. He's such a special player. But then, you know, for the Hawks, it's a bigger concern of whether or not they could get him to sign. And I think the Wild are... It would be okay for the Wild to say, look, we're going to take our swings with him this April and next April, and we'll see where we're at. Because they're, you know, they have to win now. But the Hawks would have to make sure they can get him signed. And it certainly doesn't sound like he's going to do anything but other than go to free agency. But yes, the Hawks should, anytime a player like Quinn Hughes or Mitch Marner or Mikko Rantanen, we've said it all the time, anytime a player like that is available, you have to call because it doesn't happen often.
Yeah,
I mean, it's you know, you're going to make an excuse. The timeline doesn't match up, whatever. It's just another guy that you could have had that you didn't get and back to the drawing board, you know?
Right. I mean, let me be clear. The Hawks have no one on the roster who will be
Sam Obama.
Ever.
Right.
Like, if Lev Shinov or Renzel max out, they will not be Quinn Hughes. So, yes, they should have called, but they should have called on John's guy, Cutter Gauthier, who's got, what, 21 goals now?
Who's counting?
Yeah.
Well, now... what do I hit to the main feed? I guess the last one that I've got really is from, of course, Mark Yasudis. If the Beloved lose to the team up north, is this already an unsuccessful season?
No, Lovey.
Green Bay won it all last year.
I don't want to be that meatball about it, but I'd be pretty disappointed.
Yeah,
I just said the season's already
and it just makes the last 2 weeks even harder.
Yeah,
Because you know, Sunday night that San Francisco is going to roll out Jerry Rice and every other fucking asshole Niner from the 80s that's still alive to ring the bell or whatever the fuck they do in their stadium. Yeah. and it's just going to be bad.
John Lynch is going to be mincing about on the sidelines.
No question. By the third quarter, when they're up four scores, yeah.
Yeah.
We've lived it too many times. And again, like it's setting up to, you know, if that case, and if they do lose to the team up north, then you're basically setting yourself up for a week 18 showdown, which it's not the end of the world, but I don't want to do it. No, don't do it if you don't have to.
All right. Well, we will be back next week after whatever happens on Saturday, assuming we survive, which is not a given. Hopefully we'll have the pig's blood washed off.
I mean, I'll be drunk on King Cobra too. So
yeah, so gonna be a rough one, but we're in it together.
And if Matt sees this Reddit post, he may not make it then too. So
thoughts. Well, for Matt on his last night alive, for Matt, for John, for Slack, I am Sam. Thank you so much for listening and downloading. Please rate, review, and share, and subscribe to the newsletter. Until next week, Top Guys out.